VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a program you will not want to miss today. The Daily Signal recently reported the Heritage Foundation's election fraud database has been around for some 4 years now, and so far, 1,285 proven instances of voter fraud have been documented. Now, this database is far from being comprehensive. Rather, it's more representative, demonstrating the vulnerabilities in the election system and many ways in which fraud is committed. You ask about how this can make a difference? Well, keep in mind, they previously reported over 100 elections in Ohio were decided by less than 2 votes. Then you couple this with a report from Epoch Times, that 28 million mail-in ballots unaccounted for in 4 elections. OneNewsNow.com reported recently that a government watchdog organization revealed that there are more than 30,000 more registered voters on voter rolls in Detroit, Michigan, than there are citizens in the city who are eligible to vote. Western Journal reported that South Carolina mail-in ballots ended up in Maryland. How did that happen? The Public Interest Legal Foundation reported more than 1 million ballots went to wrong addresses in 2018. In Oregon recently, many voters received a wrong primary ballot. And in West Virginia, a rural mail carrier had just been charged with attempting to defraud West Virginians of a fair election by allegedly manipulating absentee voter requests. Ladies and gentlemen, we could go on and on, but I'm going to put it this way. Houston, we've got a problem. Joining us today, Robert Knight rejoins us, a former Los Angeles Times news editor and writer. He was a media fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. He's a regularly weekly columnist for the Washington Times, townhall.com, onenewsnow.com, and others. He's held senior positions at the American Civil Rights Union, the Family Research Council, the Culture and Family Institute at Concerned Women for America, the Heritage Foundation, Coral Ridge Ministries, and the Media Research Center. He has co-authored a number of books, and some of them being The Coming Communist Wave, What Happens If the Left Captures All Three Branches of Government, and to our topic of discussion today, Liberty on the Brink, How the Left Plans to Steal Your Vote. Bob, thanks for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
Be my pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Before we get to our main topic of vote fraud today, share your perspective on what we're experiencing across this country right now, what appears to many to be just an organized takedown of a nation.
I think that's a good description of it, Jim. This isn't just spontaneous. This didn't just happen overnight. I think they were waiting for the light of fuse. And if it hadn't been George Floyd, it would have been something else down the road. The organized left in this country has been trying to evoke or send us into chaos in many ways. And the outsized reaction to the death of George Floyd has been, it's been very revealing in many ways. First of all, I just have to say it, I finally saw the video. It's awful. Mm-hmm. Makes your heart sick.
Yes.
Watching the cop, lean on the poor guy's neck for eight and a half minutes, something like that. You know, nothing justifies that. But that does not justify breaking windows, stealing TVs, beating up people, setting cars on fire, destroying whole blocks of property and businesses people spent decades building. I mean, there's no excuse. And we were discussing this a little before the program that some agitators had left piles of bricks in strategic locations. Clearly, they're trying to provoke violence. And why are they doing this? Well, the left thrives on chaos. You know, like Satan.
Yes.
Satan thrives on chaos.
Yep.
When things are in a state of confusion, that's when Satan does his best work. And I think that a lot of Americans are watching this on TV every night thinking, what is happening to our country? Well, we're in the grips of an attempted revolution. I think it will fail, by the way, abysmally. That's the good news. I think this will flame out. And I think it will backfire on the very people doing it.
Well, Robert, I asked you to come on the program today and look at another critical matter, and I really believe there's a tie-in to what we're seeing happen on the streets today, but it's what's on our plate here for 2020 and just a matter of vote fraud. And you've written on this, Liberty on the Brink, How the Left Plans to Steal Your Vote. First of all, just in a general way, as we approach this upcoming election here in November, just 5 months from now, by the way, what's at stake in this election?
Oh, I think nothing less than the survival of our self-governing republic. I think it's that serious.
That's
the,
huge.
The left has changed over the years. You know, it's no longer liberals versus conservatives. We're facing what amounts to an attempted socialist takeover. In fact, there are even so many communists involved, and there are so many communist connections to this, that's why I wrote this other book, The Coming Communist Wave. What happens if the left captures all three branches of government? It's clear that the people who have taken over one of the major parties don't love America, actually hate America as we're constituted, want to institute a top-down authoritarian system by which the government makes all the decisions. The government decides the economic state of everybody's being, and they redistribute in order to stay in power. They're buying votes to get into power, and then they stay in power by suppressing the news, suppressing information. I'm afraid much of the media is involved in this, and I come out of a media background.
Yeah.
When I worked in Orange County, California, for the Los Angeles Times, three of my colleagues had worked for the Chinese Communist Party's English language newspaper. And that was not seen as a problem in the newsroom.
Right.
Oh, three people who work for communist newspapers? No problem, you'll fit right in. I mean, most people don't realize how far this has gone and how much of the mainstream media have become a megaphone for socialism, if not communism. So the election coming up is nothing less than the survival of our republic, because I believe that the people who want to gain power want to once and for all stay in power. We got a taste of it in Virginia, where I live. The Democrats took over both houses of the legislature. They've got the governorship, and they moved very quickly to weaken electoral safeguards. They got rid of our voter ID law, so you don't have to prove who you say you are when you show up to vote. They introduced same-day registration. They increased early voting. They have automatic registration now if you deal with a government agency or the Department of Motor Vehicles, much like is the case in California. This paves the way for vote fraud. I can't put it any other way. When you take away all the safeguards to make sure you have a secret ballot and you are who you say you are, then all kinds of mischief can happen.
Yeah.
One of the worst of all is mail-in balloting.
Yeah.
You know, you keep hearing that. You know, they want mail-in balloting imposed on the entire nation. They also want to impose ballot harvesting.
Yep. We're going to delve into some of those things, Bob. And,
okay.
And what's appalling, and you mentioned what's going on in the state of Virginia and what's happened to the voting issue, but at the same time, we see the erosion of civil rights. We see the erosion of the attack on the Second Amendment in Virginia. We have seen the issue on the right to life, the slaughtering of the unborn and how that whole aspect has changed. We see the promotion of the LGBT plus advocacy that's gone through from this governor as well, and it is just a checklist of a liberal wish list here.
Yeah, and it's amazing how fast they enacted it.
Yes.
I think they realize they have a window here, and until the people of Virginia figure it out, they better move as fast as they can. And a lot of these laws are just draconian. One in particular, just making it a criminal offense give counseling to a minor to help them overcome homosexual or transgender desires. There's the government of the state of Virginia coming in, talk about getting in between a patient and a doctor or a counselor and a client. They're coming in saying, no, you can counsel kids as long as you push them into homosexuality or transgenderism. You can't go the other way around and help them overcome those unwanted feelings. We, as the government, are telling you can't. This is, you know, King George III wouldn't have intruded into people's lives this deeply.
And that's why you've written, Bob, that Marxists have specifically targeted our cultural foundations, without which we cannot maintain our republic.
Yeah, they learned long ago that there wasn't going to be a workers' revolution, and they realized that they could only foment Marxism by taking over cultural institutions. The communist Antonio Gramsci formulated this in the 1930s. He looked around and said, gee, the rest of the world isn't following the Soviet model, and workers are not revolting. So you've got to capture the culture. You've got to capture the media, the Hollywood, the educational institutions. Even corporations have come under the sway of Marxists.
Yep.
They're so busy trying to prove they're not racist, or you know, they're not greedy, or whatever.
Or they got
to
make
bend over backwards.
Yeah, they got to meet the corporate equality index requirements for the HRC and so forth.
Yeah, that's the Human Rights Campaign. That's the largest homosexual rights organization. They bullied all these corporations into advancing their agenda. It's just amazing to watch.
We're going to talk about some of these various aspects. Let's begin, Bob, here with this effort that's underway to eliminate the Electoral College and instead be subject to an interstate compact known as National Popular Vote. Briefly educate us as to the purpose of the Electoral College. Why did our founders of our nation go this direction? And we'll see why it is so critically important.
It's in the Constitution for a good reason. It's so a few people in cities don't dominate the rest of the country. And the people in the cities today lean heavily left. A lot of people are on welfare, and they vote for people who will increase government and take money from others and give it to them. It's a whole redistribution system. It's made life very hard in the cities because that's not how life works well. But the Interstate Compact is a way to get around the national popular vote. The way it works is any state that passes it will give all its electoral votes to the candidate that wins the national popular vote, regardless of how the people in that state voted. For instance, say in the state of Wisconsin, if more people voted for President Trump than Hillary Clinton, but Hillary won the popular vote nationally, all of Wisconsin's electoral votes would go to Hillary.
Yeah.
And that pretty much takes away your vote in Wisconsin, and it's determined in New York and California. Because in California alone, Hillary had a 4 million vote advantage, which was more than enough to win the popular vote for the whole country. So, and if 37 states adopt this, it would effectively be an end around around the Electoral College. And the Electoral College is there so candidates have to appeal to the whole nation, not just a few cities on each coast.
How close are we to that happening?
Well, there are 20 states, I believe, have already approved it. Now, it'll be a much higher climb for the rest of them because these are the hardcore so-called blue states. You're talking California, New York, Massachusetts, you know, very liberal states. And then they have to get quite a few more. So I don't know if they'll get them. I hope not, because that would undo our system, and it would undo our self-governing republic.
Well, they're trying to amend the Constitution without going through the constitutional means of doing so. Robert Knight is our guest here today on Crosstalk. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about this mail-in voting and the schemes that are going on with it. Back in a minute, this is Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, just how intelligent were the Neanderthal people?
Chris, the Neanderthals were people just like me and you. They were descendants of at least one of the tribes that migrated away from the Tower of Babel. Perhaps they lived in harsh conditions, but they were fully human. Archaeologists have even found that they had musical instruments, using the hollowed-out bones of animals perforated with holes like a flute. When replicas of these are made, it's found that they used the same musical scale that we use today. Mostly, they preferred minor keys. Of course, even the Israelites are known for their songs in minor keys, producing beautiful but haunting melodies. You see, Chris, even Neanderthals go back to Genesis, and so should we.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
Vote fraud is our topic today on Crosstalk. Robert Knight, our guest, and he has authored Liberty on the Brink, How the Left Plans to Steal Your Vote. Before we delve further into it, Robert, share, how is it our listeners can get a copy of this book that you've written, Liberty on the Brink?
Oh, they can get that and several other books at my website. It's roberthknight.com. RobertHKnight.com.
And Knight is spelled with a K, RobertHKnight.com. Click on store. You'll see the offerings there. And I noticed this book right now you have at 34% off on your website.
Oh, I do. I do. Because, you know, it's a small book. This is only about, let's see, how many pages? It's about 100 pages. Easy to read. I'm a journalist, so I try to go right to the point. There's no rhetoric in it. It's a lot of facts, and I'm hoping students can use it in particular, because I have everything footnoted.
Well-documented, Liberty on the Brink, How the Left Plans to Steal Your Vote. You can go to roberthknight.com. Click on store. You'll find it listed there among other writings as well. And Robert, I know those who'd like to get on your email list, you have a means for that as well.
Yeah, they could email me directly at robertknight4. That's numeral 4. At gmail.com. You know, last time we did this, Jim, I got 60 or 70 people signing up for my weekly email, which was great. I just email it out every Monday. It's my Washington Times column. There's no charge. You get it once a week, and try to keep people up to date with what's going on in Washington.
So send an email to Robert Knight, the number 4, robertknight4@gmail.com, and just say, sign me up. And he'll know what it is that you're talking about. Bob, in chapter 6 of your book, you say this: the easiest way to commit vote fraud is through absentee or mail-in voting. Now, you and I know, as well as our listeners, there is a huge push going on across this nation. President Trump has repeatedly warned about mail-in voting, addressed this issue. What are you saying is the easiest way to commit vote fraud?
And it's not just me saying it, Jim. It was a blue ribbon bipartisan commission chaired by former President Jimmy Carter and former Chief of Staff Jim Baker. And they determined of all the ways to commit vote fraud, the easiest would be in mail-in balloting. That's because nobody's watching. And you're not sure if they're delivered to the right house. You're not sure who's present when they're being filled out. One of the greatest advances in self-government was the secret ballot. They used to call it the Australian ballot. That's where you go into a voting booth. Nobody knows who you're going to vote for but you. It's nobody else's business but yours. In mail-in voting, that almost wipes it away because you can have people in neighborhoods. You have no idea who's there, who's being coerced to vote a certain way, how the ballots are collected. In California, they have what they call ballot harvesting. They passed a new law a couple of years ago. And it used to be you had to have a family member give your ballot if you were unable to deliver it yourself or mail it yourself. Now anybody can do it. So you have people effectively going door to door in neighborhoods, collecting them, perhaps even intimidating people. Mm-hmm. They've caught people in the south of Texas doing this, the politiqueros, who were basically threatening people if they didn't hand over their ballots and let them fill them out. I mean, it's rife for abuse, and even former President Jimmy Carter said so, who was not a Republican, he was a Democrat. Well, he saw that it could undermine safe elections.
And on this very issue, I mean, look at the last election in California. You had Republicans, double-digit leads going on in some very key House races, and all of a sudden, due to ballot harvesting, we have a sudden flip going from red to blue.
Oh, yeah, there was one candidate. She was leading by 14% at the end of Election Day. She should have easily won the election. And, they let the late ballots come in up to a week, and thousands of ballots came flooding in. They were delivered in bundles. And so the Democrat won instead. Orange County, I used to live there when I worked for the L.A. Times. Very conservative county. Ronald Reagan kicked off his reelection campaign in Orange County. Now it's 100% represented by Democrats. And I don't think it's because everybody in Orange County has suddenly become a liberal. I think there's vote fraud on a massive scale.
Well, when and I share it at the very outset of the program from many different news sources. I mean, here, 28 million mail-in ballots unaccounted for in four elections. Here we have 30,000 more registered voters on voter rolls in Detroit than citizens who are eligible to vote. You've got a mail carrier who is trying to, change the election by manipulating the absentee voter request. It is just ripe for fraud.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, a Pew survey in 2012 found that there were at least 2.5 million people on the voter rolls nationwide who were ineligible. Mm-hmm. These are people who had died, who had moved, who weren't the right age, who weren't citizens. That's millions of people on the voter rolls.
Yeah.
So if you just mail ballots out to everybody, you're going to get a lot of fraud.
And indeed, and we have Epoch Times that just reported Governor Newsom just signed an executive order this last month, send vote-by-mail ballots to all registered voters in California ahead of the presidential election. We understand there's some lawsuits right now filed against him for trying to use his emergency powers to change election laws. But quite a dangerous thing to just mail everybody a ballot, but then to use the guise of, you know, this medical emergency we have of coronavirus that you know, we've got to change the law.
Never let a crisis go to waste.
Mm-hmm.
I'm paraphrasing Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah, yeah.
Bill Clinton's former chief of staff and former mayor of Chicago, who knew a thing or two about manipulating the vote. That's what they're doing with this coronavirus, clearly.
Yeah.
They see it as a way to drive a truck through the election safeguards. You know, they tried to do it in a subsequent funding bill. You know, they ran through trillion dollars, and then in the next one had the whole liberal wish list crammed onto it. Had nothing to do with the virus.
And we look what happened.
Got to keep an eye on these people.
Indeed, in our state, our governor, leading up to our primary in early April, said, "No, I don't have authority. I don't have power to change the election, to cancel it. I don't have that." And all of a sudden, just a couple days before the election, lo and behold, all of a sudden he discovered, "Well, I'm going to make an executive order canceling this election and postponing it." Went to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, who said, "Governor Evers, you've overstepped your bounds on this," and the election went forth. But then all the warnings and how many people will die now as a result of voting, and then the stories would come out, you know, these people had coronavirus-like symptoms who participated in the election. Well, they couldn't pin it back on the election, and yet the scary headlines talking about the many people who are going to die and be hospitalized at the expense of certainly in this state, it was the Republicans who were forcing this election.
Yeah, this is very similar to the media coverage of Liberty University. I don't know if you read about it. Jerry Falwell Jr. opened the campus up after spring break and said, "Look, anybody is welcome to come back and stay in our dorms. We're going to encourage online courses, and we're going to maintain social distancing. We're going to have hygiene. We're going to keep it as safe as we can." And especially the foreign students and people who live far away, it would be safer for them not to travel, but to stay in place. So he was slammed from coast to coast. The New York Times went after him, the Washington Post. One of them even accused him of committing mass murder. And guess what? Not a single Liberty student has come down with COVID. Not one.
Yeah.
Actually, let me correct that. One did, and he was living off campus.
Yeah, off campus.
He wasn't even on campus. Yeah. So no on-campus cases. You think they owe him and Jerry Falwell an apology? I think so.
Yeah. And then, you know, we also see with the governor of California, Governor Newsom, putting his executive order that he gets to decide where there will be in-person polling places unilaterally, not state officials, not county officials. He himself would have that power. And then you got Nancy Pelosi chiming in saying, well, vote by mail is more democratic.
Democratic.
Yeah.
Yeah, she means that literally.
Yeah.
She's hoping the Democratic Party will benefit.
So but California has this ballot harvesting. Can conservatives harvest ballots then?
Well, they could, but that's not how conservatives generally operate.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the problems with conservatives going up against the left. The left is very communal. They get organized much more easily. The people who tend to be conservative tend to be more individualistic, kind of the rugged individual. They don't want government telling them what to do, and they don't want to be told what to do by anybody in particular, except God.
I mean, yeah.
That's a whole different ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's what's wrong with the country right now. As we push God out of our public life, evil has crept in. There's no question about it. This is satanic, the burning of cities, and leaders calling it just democratic expression, you know, just venting, and it's understandable. No, it's not. There's no excuse for this.
Bob, you write that the ultimate goal is to replace self-government with an all-powerful socialistic state to suppress Christian morality and dictate how we live and what we say. That's a pretty alarming statement.
Yeah, it is. And I'm not trying to scare people. I just want to motivate them to get out and register to vote, get their friends to register to vote, tell people in their churches that your very lives are at stake in terms of living in a free country and having your children and grandchildren grow up in a free country. You know, we've often been told that this election is the most important one in our lifetimes, but this one really is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've seen what the left can do when they got a hold of the House of Representatives and rammed through everything under the sun. It was only stopped because the Senate, under Mitch McConnell, stopped almost all of it. But if they got a hold of the Senate as well, that would end the president's ability to appoint justices to the Supreme Court and other federal courts who actually believe in the Constitution. Every time I look at one of these wacko judicial decisions from one of the circuits, I always look up and see who is the appointing president. And almost every single time, it was Bill Clinton or Barack Obama. I'm not saying this as a partisan thing. It's just it's reality. They see things through a wholly different lens. And they believe in a living constitution where you make up the law to suit whatever is the part of the liberal agenda you're advancing at any given time. It's really scary.
As we are here right now in June 2020, Bob, do you believe our nation is at a pivotal crossroads at this time?
There's no doubt that we are going to decide whether we're going to continue as a self-governing nation under God. Or we're going to go the route of so many other countries that have adopted a completely secularist, redistributionist welfare state system that crippled their economies, led to more and more power being accrued by government, and the diminution of people's basic personal liberties. And one of the first casualties in these secular states who are deciding what everybody can keep and how much they can earn is religious liberty. They don't like the idea of people appealing to a higher authority. And this is why the left has been at war with God and the family and churches since the mid-19th century. You cannot create productive, self-governing citizens without strong families. Strong families are the anchor of churches. Churches represent a different value system from that of the redistributionist state. So the Marxists and socialists see the church as the enemy, and that's why they're always attacking religious liberty. They know the enemy when they see it.
Christianity to be criminalized.
That's the agenda, and but the way they do it is very very deceptive. Pushing gay rights, for instance, to me that is the clearest, fastest road to criminalizing Christianity that you could devise. Because if you recast traditional biblical morality as a form of bigotry actionable under the law, you're criminalizing Christianity.
We got to take a break right here. Bob Knight is our guest tonight, or this afternoon here on Crosstalk. Our number, 800-733-9829. Your questions, brief comments, 800-733-9829.
There is no heartache equal to that of losing a loved one to suicide. Unanswered questions, despair, and perhaps self-blame can leave those behind with feelings of hopelessness. But true hope and help can be found in Christ alone. In the booklet Hope Beyond Despair, author Julie Gossick shares from personal experience how the truth of Scripture And the hope of the gospel can bring comfort to those who are living in the aftermath of suicide. She addresses what the Bible has to say on this issue and provides a lasting hope based on biblical principles. The book Hope Beyond Despair is available from VCY for a donation of $6 or 3 copies for a donation of $15. Just ask for Hope Beyond Despair when you call with your gift at 1-800-729-9829. You may also write VCY America, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Robert Knight is our guest on the program today. We're talking about vote fraud. And by the way, his book, Liberty on the Brink. Folks, it's an eye-opener. It's not a long read, and certainly you'll make your way through it very quickly, but one that shares important truths as to where we are. It's a current book, and it's available through his website, which is roberthknight.com. roberthknight.com. Click on store, and you'll find this book there as well as other of his writings. To be on his weekly list for his columns, you can just send him an email at roberthknight4, the number 4. That's roberthknight4 at gmail.com. And just say, you know, sign me up, or subscribe me to your list, to your columns. I'd like to receive them, and he'll take it from there. That's Robert Knight, the number 4, at gmail.com. Our lines are packed here today on Crosstalk. We're going to begin with Kathy calling in from West Allis, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Kathy.
Hi, gentlemen. Robert, hello. I just have a question about absentee ballots. Now, because of the COVID thing, there were restricted numbers of voting locations. So I chose to get my ballot absentee and the one coming in fall mailed to me. But I returned my spring ballot in person at the clerk's office, dropping it in a slot in the building. Mm-hmm. So I assume it went through. Now, is there a safer way to do that in the fall, hoping we don't have restrictions and we can go in? But I don't know if there's a better way other than, I don't know if the clerk's office will just let us come in and mail them in person, but because I'll get it absentee, I'll have it in my hands, but what's a good way to return it if I have options?
Okay.
You know, it's funny. This is one of those things where for honest people, you don't have to worry. I mean, you're not going to commit vote fraud. You're going to honestly fill out your ballot and return it. So either if you mail it back as instructed or you drop it off, I don't see any advantage. I'm more concerned with the people who will abuse the system and either, you know, take ballots that were meant for someone else or coerce people into filling them out the way they want. But for you, I would just follow the instructions. I think you'll be fine.
Okay.
In fact, I would encourage people, as much as I dislike absentee balloting, it doesn't mean that honest people who won't abuse the system shouldn't take advantage of it.
Okay. One other part of fraud. I know there's some ballots that have, in some locales, a question on there that you check off. Are you actually voting truthfully for the candidate you check off, as opposed to trying to swing the votes and pull them away from the other candidate? Is that something that can be more universal, or how does a question like that get on there for honesty?
Actually, I've never heard of that.
Okay.
I've heard of ranked choice voting, and that's another thing the left is trying to initiate, okay, which is very confusing. You not only vote for the person you want, you vote for your second and third choices. And then if there isn't a majority winner, then they start knocking out the lower vote totals and combining. It's very complicated. They initiated this in the state of Maine, where I'm from originally.
New math.
And a lot of people were confused by it.
Yeah.
And why would you confuse an electorate like that? You may end up inadvertently voting for somebody you really don't like.
Kathy, thank you for the call. We're going to go to Herbert next. Herbert in Mobile, Alabama. You're on the air, Herbert.
Yes. I'm listening, and I listen to Crosstalk, and I try to listen to Crosstalk almost every day. And I'm a Democrat, and I'm a proud Democrat. I'm not a liberal Democrat. I'm a more or less moderate to a conservative Democrat. And I'm thinking about this, what you're saying about what the so-called left people wants to try to change the Electoral College. Well, the Electoral College worked for the so-called left or the Democrats twice for Obama. So why in the world would they want to be so gung-ho on changing what's been working for them?
Well, I think they're very upset that they feel that Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump and that Al Gore beat George Bush way back in 2000. And they thought, well, this would be a way for us to ensure that if we get an overwhelming vote in the big cities where Democrats tend to live, we can control pretty much every election from here on out. So I think that's their motivation. And because it's very difficult to stop vote fraud, and they've shown that in Chicago over and over and over, where dead people tend to vote just as often as live people, the big cities would become far more powerful. And I think that's the Democratic game plan. And you say you're a conservative Democrat, but you say that. Have you read the party platform? You know, it's for unlimited abortion on demand. It's for gay rights and transgender rights.
And let me say one quick thing about the gay rights.
You might not be supporting
that. This land is not made for just Christians. If you are a taxpaying citizen of the United States, your Christianity is not on trial here. If you're paying your money, if you're paying your taxes, no matter who you are, you deserve as much rights as the next person. Now, you cannot, and I'm a Christian. I've been a Christian since I was a pre-teenager.
Sure.
You cannot throw, and Jesus himself did not try to make you follow him. He allows you to follow him. You cannot make somebody be a Christian. If they don't want to be a Christian, then they just go into hell.
This is not about...
But who's trying to make someone a Christian using government power? I don't know of anybody doing that. I do see people using the government to interfere with religious liberty. I see them threatening church tax exemptions if they don't...
You have to observe who they are.
Well, again, is it, Herbert, as we look at this, are you saying that as long as you're a taxpayer, then it's okay if your platform says to kill the innocent unborn in the womb?
Do you think your government ought to make you pay for somebody's abortion? I don't. That's not freedom.
Aside from your own religious beliefs, and that's why this country is made, because we have freedom of religion.
Yeah.
I don't have to think that way. I wish a person would be Christian. That's nice, but I don't have to make them think that way, because this the way this country was designed from the get go.
Thank you, Herbert, for your thoughts. What any closing summation there, Robert?
Yeah, the gentleman seems to be under the impression that somehow the Christians are trying to force their views on everybody else using the government, and it's precisely the opposite. Christians believe, as our founders did, in freedom of religion, and government has a job to do, and the churches have a job to do, and the First Amendment was there primarily to keep the government out of religion, not the other way around. But having said that, there's been an alarming increase in attacks on religious liberty. That's why these Christian legal groups have arisen, like the Alliance Defending Freedom and Liberty Council. The Christians are under attack all over the country just for having their basic beliefs. And, I'm afraid that the Democratic Party has pretty much declared war on Christians.
Mm. Herbert,
you can see it in the values in their platform.
Thank you for the call. We're going to move to Jeremy next in Minnesota. Jeremy, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. You were just talking about the liberals and Democrats coming down on churches. I just wanted to know what the consequences of this Supreme Court decision the other day with the California churches saying that the government can tell them they can't meet even though other businesses are meeting. I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
I haven't read the decision, but I know that was an issue before the California Supreme Court. I don't know that it's gotten to the U.S. Supreme Court.
It's not binding up. Yeah, it's not binding across the entire nation here.
Yeah, I didn't think so. But the idea that the government should dictate to churches and single them out, I think that's what's being contested here. It's one thing to declare a public health emergency. It's another to say, well, we have to keep the abortion clinics open, we have to keep liquor stores open and Walmart, but we're going to tell the churches they must stay closed. I think that's what has generated legal challenges. And it's one thing to recommend good health practices. It's another to come down like a steel boot on the neck of churches and say, you will not operate unless you do it the way we want. And it's been an overreach of power all over the country, particularly in liberal states. And California is one of them. And I don't know what the situation is in Wisconsin. I don't know if the churches have been under lock.
Well, again, here not only was it with the election, but the governor tried to extend his constitutional authority to keep the state closed up here. And again, the court had to slap his hands and say he acted beyond what the Constitution allows. And so, therefore, his order to keep the shutdown fell apart. And now it's up to municipalities, counties, local governments, et cetera. And by and large, the state is largely opened up and churches are meeting all across the state.
Oh, that's good news. That's good to hear. We'd been shut down in Virginia. Governor Northam issued a draconian order shutting the state down, couldn't even use the beaches or anything.
And on a similar note, our Supreme Court is just accepting a case because there have been challenges here on our voter rolls. The Election Commission is, and groups have been ordered to remove people who have moved or not responded to, you know, requests on address verifications and so forth, and have refused and have kept thousands of names on the rolls and refused to remove people, deceased and moved, etc. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court just announced that they're taking up this case here again. So it's a matter certainly to keep in prayer. Let's go to Fred in Milwaukee. You're on the air, Fred.
Yes, regarding the book title, Liberty on the Brink, is there any truth to the life of democracies being only 250 years old, since we're going to have our 244th anniversary coming up? And a side note, dead people are receiving stimulus checks. How about that for government accuracy?
You can't minimize the level of government inefficiency. I mean, I've seen it up close in Washington, D.C. The waste is unbelievable. And just anything of that great size, you can make lots of mistakes. But you can also have a lot of corruption, too. I know that people are getting stimulus checks who aren't alive anymore. And they may be getting multiple ones. But as far as a democracy, yeah, we're the longest. We're certainly the longest lasting republic in history. You can't really count Rome because they had slavery. We got rid of slavery after about 80 years or less. But we've been self-governing. We have the longest living constitution that guarantees individual rights. There's been nothing like that in history. So it's worth celebrating America exceptionalism. And we've been a model for the rest of the world. That's why it's so irksome to see the left constantly attacking America as if we're the most evil nation in the world. We invented slavery. We kept it going with Jim Crow. We have the original sin, and it's still standing us, and therefore, and we'll never be free from it. You look around the rest of the world, there's still slavery in many places.
Yeah. We got to take a break here, Robert Knight, our guest. I have a couple open lines here at 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
For the Worldview Weekend Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. The destruction of the family. It's been a goal of the cultural Marxist for, well, a few generations now. And why? Because they understand that the family is the incubator for passing on the values that maintain a constitutional republic and our liberties and our freedoms. John Adams understood this on an entry dated June 2nd, 1778. He said, quote, "The foundation of national morality must be laid in private families. How is it possible that children can have any just sense of the sacred obligations of morality or religion if, from their earliest infancy, they learn their mothers live in habitual infidelity to their fathers, and their fathers as constant infidelity to their mothers," end quote. In other words, they understood that the value of right and wrong, the laws of nature and nature's God, the foundation of a constitutional republic, must come from the family.
Just a reminder about Robert's book. It's available on his website, roberthknight.com. roberthknight.com, Knight spelled with a K. And you'll find it there when you click on the store on his site. To get on his email list, roberthknight4, that's roberthknight4@gmail.com. And just put in the subject line, sign me up, and he'll take care of that. Let's go to Kathleen in Brookfield, Wisconsin. Kathleen, thank you for your patience. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for all the hard work that you put into this. I just have a couple of frustrations, and one is, I feel like, yes, we should all vote, get out there and vote, but I know, and I don't know if you agree or not, but I really feel like there's cheating going on in every state, just about. And if everybody gets out there and vote, I mean, you're still dealing with cheaters, no matter what. And the other comment I'd like to make is conservatives really need to get united and do something, because you can see how the left is so united, and whether it's cheating or rioting in the streets, they are way more united than the conservatives are. And my one last suggestion, I'd say maybe we should consider dividing America up. And the conservatives live in their states, and the liberals live in theirs.
I think we tried that once before.
Well, maybe we should go back to that, because, you know, this fighting is just so awful, and it just tears on people, you know, their health and their outlook, and, you know, we're not happy with their decisions, they're not happy with our decisions.
Yeah. Thank you, Kathleen. And Robert, several points here, one of which he says, you know, no matter if we go and vote or not, there's going to be cheating out there. Should that stop us from going in and casting a vote?
No, all the more reason that we should double our efforts to vote and get others of like mind to vote.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a rule of thumb that if you're a Republican candidate, you kind of have to win by at least 5% or more just to cover the cheating. But you can do that. You can do that. I think there are more people who believe the way we do than there are people who believe in the radical left. I think there are a small minority in this country. They fool a lot of people, but I think the people who are really genuinely pushing a godless, secular, redistributionist agenda might constitute 15% of the people. Conservatives consistently outpoll them in surveys. But our people have to turn out. The problem is they sit home and hope somebody else votes the right way. I don't think we can afford to do that any longer. Mm-hmm. And as far as the fact that we're so divided, it's almost like two different countries. But remember, Jesus warned us about that.
Yeah.
That, you know, you'd be at war with the world if you loved Jesus, and that's the case. It's really the believers, people who believe in God. And I would include Orthodox Jews in this. They don't share the love of Christ, but I know a lot personally who love God and love America and are appalled at the erosion of values and the rise of Marxism, basically. And they're good allies. And they need to vote in great numbers too, but it's mainly the churches that have to wake up. You know, the pastors are going to have to speak more from the pulpit and warn people what's coming. One of my great complaints in recent years has been the silence of the pastors. They think, okay, I won't be controversial, but if people are looking to their pastors for information on what's most important in life, and they ignore politics, then people get the idea, well, it's really not that important. As long as I have my personal faith in Jesus, everything will turn out. But we are the governing body here. We are Caesar. It's a whole different ballgame mm-hmm. from being in Rome
yeah.
or even in Israel at the time. We are responsible for our rulers, and that's a privilege we have that we should exercise.
Let's go to Merle in Tennessee. You're on the air.
Yeah, Jim, two quick things. One is, you know, I hope they stack the deck against Trump because we got a big God. You look at Gideon and the 300. I hope they try to stack the deck because my God loves a challenge. The other thing is, I believe we're being baited. I think we're being baited to rise up and have a civil war, and then they will blame us as the bad guys. So we're going to have to be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. And the other thing is, 51 million Christians set out the last election. So we've got to wake up, tell your neighbor, tell everybody. And I thank you for having your guest on today, Jim.
Thank you, Merle. And let me also bring in Susan in Meridian, Mississippi, and then we'll comment. Go ahead, Susan.
My comment is, I'm trying to remember the details, but I had an aunt who was from Duval County in Texas, and I'm sure Mr. Knight is familiar or has heard of experiences from there. But they were known for their rigged elections, and mm-hmm. I think it was when Johnson was first elected, they lost about, I can't remember the details mm-hmm. now, it's been so long ago, but he got elected because they just happened to find enough votes to help him get elected.
Okay, we'll have Bob comment on that. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, last-minute votes, and he barely got elected. That's why they called him Landslide Lyndon. You know, it was a derogatory term, actually, because he just barely squeaked by. But, boy, he paid back his detractors because he, in 1954, when he was in Congress, he put it in the tax code, the Johnson Amendment, which barred pastors from giving endorsements to candidates. It's unconstitutional. The IRS has never tested it because they know that there's no way you can restrict speech that way. But a lot of pastors have been quiet because of it, and they really need to speak up. The Alliance Defending Freedom for years has done a Sunday every year in which pastors are urged to actually openly endorse candidates, record the sermon, and send it to the IRS. And they've done this by the hundreds, and the IRS never does anything because they know it gets thrown out of court immediately. So more pastors really have to be bold and speak their values because their people need to hear it.
We thank you all for your calls. Robert, we've got 30 seconds. What do you want to leave with our listeners on this issue?
Well, I hope people don't get too despondent over the state of our country right now with the rioting going on and so forth. This will burn out eventually, and I don't think it will help the people who are behind it. I think it will backfire on them. It may awaken a sleeping giant, the old silent majority that they used to talk about. A lot of people sit back and say, okay, I can no longer stay on the couch. I've got to do something, and that would be a good thing for America.
Bob, thank you again for being with us here today on the broadcast. Very informative.
No, Jim, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. God bless you.
Robert Knight, our guest here today. Folks, his website, roberthknight.com. roberthknight.com. And to be on his email list, robertknight4@gmail.com. Vote Fraud, our topic today on Crosstalk. Thanks so much for joining us here on the VCY America Network.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.